Good afternoon. It is March 18th, 2023. 18:17 hours, daylight savings time, and Ward Green, right here. For your study with you, all you willing little children now, Chapter 4, Paragraph 3 of the Wild Road article says... Well, let's talk about a little bit about what it's about. It's about the evidence of Israel in Egypt. So how do we know that there were ever Jews in Egypt? Well, here's what this paragraph talks about. At the site of Tel el-Mashkuta, quantities were found of handmade, flat-bottomed cooking pots, such as those common in Canaan, or exactly what one would expect had Israelites been present, as Exodus 1 and 11 says they were. Tel el-Mashkuta is identified as Pithom of the Bible, and that's mentioned at Exodus 1 and 11 as the place where the Israelites were working as slaves to the Egyptians to build the city itself. They were building... Well, let's look at the actual scripture. I mean, we can't talk about it unless we know exactly what it says. So we always have to look it up if we want to know. Exodus 1 and 11 says they were building cities as storage places for Pharaoh. That's what it says. Pithom and Ramesses were the two cities. So that takes us back to the... Let's go back to our study for today in the Bible now. Just get that ready for us. But continuing on here, so Pithom was the city that they were building, along with the city of Ramesses in Egypt. And we've already identified that the Hyksos were the ones who were there in the city of Pithom. There was no occupation other than... let's go back to what we read. The only occupation was during the Hyksos period. Bryant G. Wood states, and during the Hyksos period, the people living in that part of Egypt were the Hyksos, so therefore... This city of Pithom, identified as Tel el-Mashkuta, is the place where not only where the Hyksos were living, but it's the place where the Israelites were working as slaves. Therefore, they must have been slaves to the Hyksos. Logically, that's the conclusion, which we drew yesterday. Tel el-Daba, on the other hand, which is the other city that we mentioned, which is the ancient city of Avaris, has stratigraphy to the early 12th dynasty. In Egypt, the 12th dynasty is the time around 1900 years BC, and that was the same period to which we dated Joseph. So that's important because it's the ancient city of Avaris does have evidence dating back as far as that same time period to which we date Joseph. Very significant because that's where we believe Joseph was. In the genealogy, that's the time period to which we dated him. And we know that the Israelites lived in the region of the Delta, the Nile Delta, which is that's where Avaris is located. As also is true of Tel el-Mashkuta as well. Another city called Ramesses in the Bible was called Pi-Ramesses during the period of Ramesses II's reign. But it was called Roati at some earlier time. Again, the four-room houses found at Roati are similar to those found in Israel later on during the Iron Age. We see there's a picture here of an Israelite four-room house, what they look like, is illustrated in this depiction here. And that's what they found. So there's evidence that Israel was living in Egypt. Now, Ramesses is mentioned in the Bible as the location that Israel stayed in Egypt when Jacob moved to live there. That's footnote 4, Genesis 47 and 11. 47 and 11. Genesis 47 and 11. Thus, it says that the father of Joseph and his brothers were living in the land of Ramesses. In that verse, it's stated right there. That's what we're looking for. The name of this place called Ramesses in Egypt is mentioned thus in the Bible. Right. And that was when Jacob moved there in 1914 BCE, in the genealogy, to live there in the city or the area called Ramesses. Now, both the cities of Pithom and Ramesses are places that had names that were different in the earlier times. Perhaps, that is. We don't know everything about the earlier times, but while the later names, such as Ramesses, mislead people to believe that the Exodus took place in the reign of Ramesses II. That's a common misconception. For its later name, Ramesses, by which that city or place was called. So many people make the mistake of assuming that if it was called Ramesses, then it must have been during the reign of Ramesses II that the Exodus occurred, because he was the first well-known king of Egypt called Ramesses, who reigned for a significant period of time, his grandfather being also named Ramesses, but he didn't reign for anywhere near that length of time. So this is why we based chronology on time, not on names, for the names of places change at times, and the recent ones are no less likely to be used than the older ones, at least as far as any argument as has been heard goes. Even assuming that the original biblical texts dated to the very time of the events described, however unlikely it may be, we don't know how unlikely it is. Maybe it's very likely, but we just don't know. Whether the original Bible texts date to the very time when the events occurred, or whether they were written sometime later, we don't need to know that. But even if we assume that they were contemporary documents that were written at the same time as the events occurred, the later editors could update the place names. So they could, when they recopied the Bible text for future generations, they could update the place names to reflect the current names of those cities. It is a failure to believe in such editing that has led the belief that the Exodus dated to Ramesses II. So some people assumed that if the town was called Ramesses, it was therefore present only at the time of Ramesses, and that it wasn't updated, that the name, the place name wasn't changed over time. Therefore, it must be during the reign of Ramesses because it's called Ramesses. Another assumption, that was the mistake that is possible to make, and that many people have made. Another assumption that is being made, perhaps wrongly, is that the name Ramesses did not exist before at all. However, the Bible record has been proven true over and over again, and so can be taken as evidence on its own. So the fact that it says in the Bible that this place was called Ramesses, that could be taken as evidence that the name of Ramesses is at least as old as the time of Jacob and Joseph and his family when they moved to Egypt. The name may have existed before, in other words, as thereby evidenced. Just the fact that it's written in the Bible is evidence. We ought not to stray too far from the evidences of Israel. So, there's some references there too, to scholarly work and to the Bible also. Now, let's turn to Genesis chapter 18. In the morning, I'm still having strange issues with my stomach early in the morning. It's not strange. It's not very dramatic. It's just that I don't enjoy my breakfast, and it's not very pleasant to eat my first meal in the morning. I don't feel well after the meal. As I eat later on during the day, I feel fine. So that's my update on that. I don't know what's going on in the morning. I can't seem to eat. Now, maybe it depends what I eat in the morning, but I don't think... What did I eat today? I'm trying to think in the morning. I'm trying to remember what I ate today in the morning. Well, I wrote it all down, so... I don't normally write it all down, I guess, but because I'm having problems, I need to keep track. Oh, yeah, I had a chocolate latte, actually, in the morning. This morning is what I had. And it wasn't bad, but I'm trying to take some vitamin D again to see if that's going to cause any issue. Taking at least 2,000 units of vitamin D today to see whether I can tolerate that. And I don't notice any bad effect from it, but maybe the early morning effect is caused partly by the vitamin D, but I don't think so, because today is the first day I've taken the vitamin D like that, and I had the same problem yesterday with my stomach in the morning. It's not my stomach that's so bad, it's just that after I eat, I don't feel... It's not that my stomach is upset, it's that it doesn't sit well in my stomach, and it makes me feel like perhaps my blood sugar is wrong or something, like maybe I get a sudden surge in blood sugar. That's possibly what it is. So I don't feel, it doesn't feel good. That could be what it is, but I haven't yet determined anything more about it. So maybe I need to fast longer in the morning too, and start eating much more slowly, very small amounts of food in the morning. I'm not sure what I'll do. Well, one thing I'll say, it's possible that my health is actually better than it was, because in many ways the salt is, for example, one reason why. The salt is an inflammatory, just like sugar is. So all the sugar and all the salt that you're eating, if you can eliminate a lot of sugar and eliminate a lot of salt, or some of each, you're going to find a lot less inflammation in your body, I believe. I did. So it makes my overall health, you know, much better. I know my health is better in many respects. It's just that I'm not able to do what I used to do in terms of what I ate and how much I ate and when I ate, which might not be wrong. It might be that I just need to eat in a better way than I was before. I might need to do something better, different, but better. And maybe that's why I'm not able to break my fast in the mornings in the way that I used to. I don't know. But I do believe my health is better. I do. Because I can feel it. I feel better, you know. But, yeah, I feel better than I used to feel in many, many ways. It's just that not everything is perfectly right yet. I don't have a problem. I'm doing really well with... I mean, there's no constipation. Like, there are no inflammation, you know, of the bowel. Like, it's so much better. Like, it's just... I mean... But having said that, I'm not really full of energy yet. I don't know how to convert the energy in my body into, or the food in my body into energy yet. My body doesn't know how to do that yet. And maybe that's still because I'm still overdosed on vitamin D, but I don't know that for sure. Or maybe I still have too much calcium in my body. I don't believe that either of those is true now. I think that the iodine was causing the issue. Very possibly, although that wouldn't account for the frequent urination. So, no, I may well have had an overdose on vitamin D as well. So I'm still cautious about the vitamin D. I think I have to be. I think I have to be, but I'd like to know more about both and all of my supplements, all of my food. The thing is, all food has different elements in it. Like, some food has iodine in it, so I could have been overdosing because of all the dairy products, which all have iodine. Plus, I was taking salt that is natural sea salt that has iodine. Even though it's natural source iodine, it's more iodine. And I was getting iodine from a supplement that I was taking with my lattes I was adding in the morning. I was adding iodine, which I'm not doing now. But all the iodine that I was taking could have caused my weight loss, definitely. So now Genesis chapter 18. Afterward, Jehovah appeared to him, meaning Abraham, among the big trees of Mamre. Mamre, we saw, was an Amorite. He was the brother of Eshcol and the brother of Aner. He was called Mamre, and so the big trees of Mamre were the big trees belonging to this man, apparently. But that's where Abraham was tabernacling, and while he was sitting at the entrance of the tent about the heat of the day, when he raised his eyes, Abraham that is, when he raised his eyes, then he looked, and there three men were standing some distance from him. When he caught sight of them, he began running to meet them from the entrance of the tent and proceeded to bow down to the earth. Then he said, Jehovah, if now I have found favor in your eyes, please do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be taken, please, and you must have your feet washed. Then recline under the tree and let me get a piece of bread and refresh your hearts. Following that, you can pass on, because that is why you have passed this way to your servant. At this they said, all right, you may do just as you have spoken. So Abraham went hurrying to the tent to Sarah and said, hurry, get three seah measures of fine flour. Knead the dough and make round cakes. Next, Abraham ran to the herd and proceeded to get a tender and good young bull and to give it to the attendant, and he went hurrying to get it ready. He then took butter and milk and the young bull that he had got ready and set it before them. Then he himself kept standing by them under the tree as they were eating. They now said to him, where is Sarah, your wife? To this he said, here in the tent. So he continued, I'm surely going to return to you next year at this time, and look, Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Now Sarah was listening at the tent entrance, and it was behind the man. And Abraham and Sarah were old, being advanced in years. Sarah had stopped having menstruation. Hence Sarah began to laugh inside herself, saying, after I am worn out, shall I really have pleasure, my Lord being old besides? Then Jehovah said to Abraham, why was it that Sarah laughed, saying, shall I really and truly give birth, although I have become old? Is anything too extraordinary for Jehovah? at the appointed time, I shall return to you next year at this time, and Sarah will have a son. But Sarah began to deny it, saying, I did not laugh. For she was afraid. At this he said, No, but she did laugh. Later the men got up from there and looked down towards Sodom, and Abraham was walking with them to escort them. And Jehovah said, Am I keeping covered from Abraham what I am doing? Why, Abraham is surely going to become a nation great and mighty, and all the nations of the earth must bless themselves by means of him. For I have become acquainted with him, in order that he may command his sons and his household after him, so that they shall keep Jehovah's way to do righteousness and judgment, in order that Jehovah may certainly bring upon Abraham what he has spoken about him. Consequently, Jehovah said, The cry of complaint about Sodom and Gomorrah, yes, it is loud, and their sin, yes, it is very heavy. I am quite determined to go down, that I may see whether they act altogether according to the outcry over it that has come to me, and if not, I can get to know it. At this point, the men turned from there and got on their way to Sodom. But as for Jehovah, he was still standing before Abraham. Then Abraham approached and began to say, Will you really sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there are 50 righteous men in the midst of the city. Will you then sweep them away and not pardon the place for the sake of the 50 righteous who are inside it? It is unthinkable of you that you are acting in this manner to put to death the righteous man with the wicked one, so that it has to occur with the righteous man as it does with the wicked. It is unthinkable of you. Is the judge of all the earth not going to do what is right? Then Jehovah said, If I shall find in Sodom 50 righteous men in the midst of the city, I will pardon the whole place on their account. But Abraham went on to answer and say, Please, here I have taken upon myself to speak to Jehovah, whereas I am dust and ashes. Suppose the 50 righteous should be lacking 5. Will you for the 5 bring the whole city to ruin? To this he said, I shall not bring it to ruin if I find there 45. But yet again he spoke further to him and said, Suppose 40 are found there. In turn he said, I shall not do it on account of the 40. But he continued, May Jehovah please not grow hot with anger, but let me go on speaking. Suppose 30 are found there. In turn he said, I shall not do it if I find 30 there. But he continued on, Please, here I have taken upon myself to speak to Jehovah. Suppose 20 are found there. In turn he said, I shall not bring it to ruin on account of the 20. Finally he said, May Jehovah please not grow hot with anger, but let me speak just this once. Suppose 10 are found there. In turn he said, I shall not bring it to ruin on account of the 10. Then Jehovah went his way when he had finished speaking to Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. So that was an interesting conversation that Abraham had with Jehovah. And one of the most interesting parts of this chapter is that Jehovah appeared to Abraham among the big trees of Mamre, it says in verse 1. And when Abraham raised his eyes, he looked, and there 3 men were standing some distance from him. And then he said, Jehovah. When he addressed whoever was there, he spoke to them as though one of them was Jehovah. And later on, we saw that a number of them left to go down to Sodom in verse 22, but Jehovah still was with Abraham. So who was Jehovah, and as whom was he manifesting himself, is one question we might ask. It seems apparent to me that it seems to me that it's a very overlooked part of the Bible that we don't hear about this very often, how the Bible represents Jehovah in particular in this case, when Abraham is talking to Jehovah as though he's one of the men, or as though he appeared with the men or something. It's not clear. He looked and there were three men. He bowed down to the earth and he said, Jehovah, please do not pass by. Don't pass by, but come in and have some food. And these men answered him as though they were Jehovah and said, okay, we'll come and eat food with you. So it's interesting that Jehovah has a manifestation in human form in this case, and that it's not considered by the Bible writer as being anything unusual to consider Jehovah as having human form. So men come, strangers come, and they're considered to be Jehovah, in other words. That's one possible interpretation, that men are considered to be Jehovah if they're strangers. So they're given hospitality, for one thing. That's one very obvious thing here that we see. Abraham treated them with a great deal of hospitality. He said, come in and, you know, have your feet washed and take a little water in verse 4 and recline under the tree, let me get some bread. And then he went further than that. He ended up giving them more than just bread. He got butter and milk and bread in the form of round cakes, and he also got the meat of a young bull that was he had it prepared for these visitors. And then Sarah was given the promise that she would have a child, and she was she was laughing inside herself, it says, laughing on the inside. And Jehovah knew that she'd laughed on the inside too. He was not unaware of that. But the promise that she would have a child was repeated to her, that she would have this child. Even though she was past the point of having menstruation, she was past childbearing, she was still promised to have a child, as we already saw in the previous study. I believe it was just the previous chapter, was it not? Yeah. So it's not clear when this promise, it was given to, I mean, it's not clear how many times this promise was given to Abraham. He was called Abraham right from this point when he got to be old enough to receive the promise, or when he came to be 99, that was when he got the promise, and that was at the age of 99 was when Abraham got his name, Abraham, as well. But at that time, it's interesting, the covenant of circumcision was given, and there was a promise given of the birth of a son through Sarah, his wife, and his name would be called Isaac, and that was given in the previous chapter that we did yesterday. So here it is again. There's another visitation of Jehovah, and this time addressing the promise to Sarah more directly, whereas in the previous chapter it was a promise given to Abraham. Right, so this chapter 18 is the promise given to Sarah. And the promise was that the next year, when the person returned, she would have a son when Jehovah returned the next year. So it's what we just read. And she was incredulous. Sarah was unbelieving. And we know that, of course, Isaac was born to Sarah. And this did come true, but we haven't yet reached that point in our study yet. It's coming. We know that Isaac did in fact get born, because he had a son also called Jacob, and Jacob had a son called Joseph, and all those events did happen. And Joseph was the second in command of all Egypt, and that's how Israel was saved, you know, out of the famine. And then eventually Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt to the promised land that had originally been promised to Abraham. And all of that is part of the Jewish history that we have in the Bible. It's recorded in the Bible, and also in the Jewish tradition it's recorded too. But the Bible is the only portion of it that we believe is, or that we call God's word, that we believe is God's word addressed to us, to mankind. That we have the Bible as God's word. It's not the same to use the book of Jasher as it is to use the Holy Scriptures. The Holy Scriptures are different in that regard. We have this also this account about Sodom, and how Jehovah would save the whole city of Sodom if there were any, or so many as 10 righteous people in the city of Sodom. In the city of Sodom, or that whole district of Sodom and Gomorrah, but it was talked about in this chapter as being the city of Sodom. In the city of Sodom, it said, if Jehovah, so Sodom was a very, very bad place, or it was a place where very bad people lived, and they were doing very bad things in Sodom, and that's why, and also Gomorrah, in verse 20 it was mentioned, Sodom and Gomorrah, yeah, but it was specifically singled out, the one city, Sodom, was singled out also in verse 26, but Sodom and Gomorrah were the places themselves were inhabited by such evil men that Jehovah was going to bring the whole city to ruin, but not if he should find 10 righteous people in verse 32, then he wouldn't bring the city to ruin if he found 10 righteous people there. And that's it for our study. So this is part of the divine heritage that we have in the Word of God, is what's written here. There were just gross sinners that lived in Sodom and Gomorrah that were displeasing to Jehovah to such an extent that he was very seriously going to bring it, and you know, consider bringing the whole city, both cities, to ruin, destroy the cities with the people in them because of their displeasing, grievous behavior that was so evil in the sight of Jehovah, in his eyes, in Jehovah's eyes. It's all about Jehovah, his eyes, how he sees people, right? I mean, we don't always understand why Jehovah believes things need to be done a certain way. We don't always know everything about why. But Jehovah does have a way, right? And then he said, he wanted to go down there to see. First of all, he was open-minded. Jehovah wasn't, he wasn't closed-minded. He wanted to see, in verse 21, whether they acted according to the outcry that had come to his ears, that he'd known about or heard about. He needed to find out whether it was true that they were actually doing the things that were reported, or whether he could find out what was going on. That, so he was open-minded enough to go down and investigate. He wasn't closed-minded. He was going to go and find out, and then he would decide. That's where Abraham stepped in, and on behalf of any righteous who would be living there. In fact, we know that Lot was living there. He was the nephew of Abraham. Lot was living in Sodom, so that might be one reason why Abraham would have stepped in to talk to Jehovah and ask him, you know, how many, you know, or how many righteous do there need to be in order for you to pardon the city and pardon the whole district, perhaps, or the particular city being considered. 20 are found there. But what if 20 are found there? He wouldn't bring it to ruin on account of 20 or 10 or... It stopped at 10. The number came down to 10. So that was enough for Abraham to know that if there were 10 righteous people living in Sodom, that Jehovah wouldn't destroy it. So it's Saturday, March 18th. What is there more to say about everything? It's been, I mean, I'm working... Right now, I think my main work is to try to recover, get my vitamins figured out, you know, and get my health optimized, or, you know, to recover from my apparent overdose of vitamin D, which seems to be an overdose of vitamin D. I don't know yet for sure. It won't be possible to ascertain until much later whether I did have too much vitamin D, but I think that's my next endeavor. It's not to do too many other things, but to try to focus on my health and on my recovery, and also to avoid iodine toxicity and avoid any other forms of vitamin or food issues, you know, to make sure I eat the right food in the next little while. As much as I can, learn as much as I can, and investigate also these other symptoms that are common in these cases. And I know that vitamin D toxicity normally is recoverable. You can recover from it without any permanent damage normally, especially if it's not, it depends on the severity too, but it's especially in cases where it's not that severe. I just feel like, because I had the frequent urination that seemed like hypercalcemia, and because I had the drowsiness, which is so severe, I had a very severe drowsiness. Now, right now, I did take some vitamin D today, right? I didn't get a full amount of sleep last night that I was getting. I got 7 hours last night. But the sleep was very good. Like, the quality of sleep is very good. So, but, I mean, I'm a little drowsy now because I didn't get as much sleep last night as I was getting. So, but the thing is, I want to say something about the drowsiness. I'm not dead tired at night. When I went to bed last night, I could have stayed up later. The drowsiness is just gone. So, and it was very abnormal drowsiness. So I think there was something going on, that the drowsiness was a symptom of something, you know, of specifically of this over dose of vitamin D. And you know, we saw that that was one of the symptoms that distinguished it from some of the other vitamin toxicities. So, wait a minute now. Let's see. See if I can get. Well, I've already talked about iodine poisoning, abdominal pain, coughing, delirium, diarrhea. Don't have any of those, really. Well, I did have a little tiny bit of delirium, and I thought I had. I've had a couple of tiny little coughing episodes, but they weren't even episodes. They were very brief. But no abdominal pain, no fever, really. No, absolutely not fever. No diarrhea. No gum and tooth soreness, but a little bit of loss of appetite, maybe, but not too badly. I'm able to eat. I don't really... I want to eat, because I keep wanting to settle my stomach, so I'm not really suffering from that, but I think there was a loss of appetite during the time when I lost weight, and that could have been iodine poisoning rather than the vitamin D. To say there was a metallic taste in my mouth, I'm not sure if that's true, but... I think there was, I don't know what kind of taste it was, but there was possibly some unusual, different taste, anyway, in my mouth during the time of this weight loss, when I wasn't eating. I'm not sure if I could put too much emphasis on that, though. I'm not sure. So acute iodine toxicity is rare. It's very rare, so I certainly didn't have a very severe case of it, if it was iodine. Yeah, it's going to take a long time to study. Like, I mean, we might find out 2 years from now that my symptoms that I had right now in the past few weeks were caused by some particular food or thing I was eating or some water I was drinking or whatever. That we might find that out 2 years from now. We just don't know. It with health, it's a very complex subject, and it's an ongoing study, always ongoing. You know, you need to continue studying it at all times and continue adjusting your knowledge and your opinion accordingly. So, yeah, it requires a great deal of humility. And, of course, you know, honesty and being quick to admit your mistakes is very important. But it's also not always to be quick to change either, because not always to change things too quickly, because then you can't keep track of what's happening, and everything has to be recorded carefully and, you know, documented with regard to what you're doing. If you want to ever look back through your records, you have to keep records, so you can trace the cause of a certain illness back to the particular nutrients that you were using at that time for food, right? I mean, it's very, very plain. You have to study these things. It's just very odd, the fact that I can eat. But during the day now, I am in a different state of mind. I can't just eat any food. I can't just go to the fridge and open up and eat anything. I don't have a desire to eat most of the things in the fridge. I have to find out what it is I want to eat. I have to find out what can I eat, and I can eat honey and peanut butter with crackers. That I can eat. I can't just eat anything. I can eat. I was able to eat a chocolate latte in the morning. I can eat. I don't really have a craving for matcha tea lattes very much right now. I'm not sure why that is. I would like to take. I need to take some fat, and with the fat, I need to take vitamin K2, because I need K2, I believe, for the proper processing of calcium that's in my body, you know, the whatever I have. I need to take the K2, so, and it, you know, I mean, I could stop taking that too at some point if I think that's a problem, but I don't think that's a problem, because K2 is very important that we have it in our bodies. But the vitamin D part, which normally is needed in order for K2 to work, I don't want to take the vitamin D part, except very circumspectly, very with a very high awareness of what the vitamin D might be causing in my body, so that I can see what it's doing. If I'm taking more vitamin D and I've already got too much vitamin D, but if I've got a lot of extra vitamin D, then maybe taking a little more won't have any effect anyway. But it's, if I'm trying to reduce the vitamin D in my body, then I shouldn't be taking any more. It's a difficult decision. I can investigate. I can research, how do I determine if I have too much vitamin D in my body without taking any, you know, just based on symptoms, without doing any tests of any bodily fluids or anything, without doing any of that. How do I know if I have too much vitamin D in my body right now? That can be researched, and I can find out what the options are for, or not options, because I don't think there should be any action needed. I think it should just be research. I can find out what research will help me to decide how much vitamin D I do have in my body based on just the symptoms I have. It's got to be possible. I know it is, because everything has symptoms. But everybody's different, and everybody's understanding is different. I believe that Jehovah's capable of letting me know somehow whether I have too much of anything in my body, such as a vitamin or any type of nutrient or element like iodine. Like, for example, iodine should flush out fairly quickly, but vitamin D can take 15 days to get rid of half of it. So yeah, I think I'm recovering, but it's only been like about 3 or 4 days since I started to recover, so I'm not going to see massive improvement yet until 15 days has gone by, perhaps, and then I'll see, maybe I'm twice as good as I was after 15 days, right? Maybe. If it's vitamin D, it should take 15 days for me to manifest health that's twice as good as when I started this discovery of the toxicity. So I have to wait 15 days patiently, and I shouldn't be taking vitamin D, actually, for 15 days. But I suddenly thought, well, wait a minute, what if I'm not toxic with vitamin D right now? And if I don't take vitamin D, I might be deficient in vitamin D, right? But I don't believe that. Yeah, I don't believe that it's. I don't believe in making it more complicated by trying to test something and detect how much vitamin D is, you know, is in any part of any bodily fluids or anything. I don't believe in that, because that's just, that introduces a lot more complexity is what it does. We should be able to determine whether I've eaten too much vitamin D based on the research and knowing how much vitamin D I've eaten and my symptoms. Those three things alone should be able to determine everything. I should be able to determine everything. I still have to research a lot more. I have to go back to researching the symptoms of hypercalcemia and vitamin D toxicity together with hypercalcemia. So if I do have hypercalcemia, I shouldn't be taking calcium either. And that's probably why I'm reacting in the morning, because I have hypercalcemia. So I shouldn't be taking calcium in the morning. That's a mistake. That's what I think. So I'm going to have to stop that. I'm going to stop the calcium in the morning. That's my next step, is to stop calcium in the morning. I won't take it in the morning. I won't take it at any time, actually. I'm going to avoid calcium, I think, for the next... I'll try that and see if it works. But the reason I don't think that works is because I tried it already. I tried that yesterday. I had peanut butter and, you know, honey or whatever, peanut butter and marmalade, and I didn't have... And I ate some crackers with it, but I didn't have any calcium. in the morning, and it didn't make me feel good. I didn't feel good at all. Even though I avoided calcium, I didn't feel any good. So, yeah, I ate some potatoes today. They felt really good to eat the potatoes, home fries. So I just have to find some food that I can eat in the morning that doesn't make me feel like my blood sugar is going through the roof or something, or that I have, you know, a general malaise in my body, or something feels wrong, or that I'm weak. It makes me feel weaker if I eat the wrong food. That's the current state. I don't feel satisfied by my food. I feel like, yeah, I ate, but I didn't eat the right thing because I don't feel right, you know. But maybe, you know, maybe if I eat potatoes in the morning, that's going to be the answer to the problem. I don't know. But we can't get ahead of ourselves. It's one day at a time. Every day is one day at a time. One day at a time, try to do better tomorrow than we did yesterday. That's generally the approach to life, the way it always is. That's always the approach to life. Try and improve on yesterday by what we do today. This is March 18th, 2023. It's 1908 hours, and my name is Ward Green, and I'm very glad you were able to join us for today's study. Little children, have a wonderful day. I love you. God bless you, and praise Jehovah, and follow the course of hospitality as Abraham did, as we learned today in the Bible. Don't forget Jesus, our Messiah. Bye for now.